From Washington, this is VOA News. I'm Victor Beatty reporting. The U.S. has accused Iran of supplying Houthi rebels in Yemen with a missile fired into Saudi Arabia in July and called on the U.N. to hold Tehran accountable for violating Security Council resolutions. Saudi Crown Prince Mohammed bin Salman has accused Iran of direct military aggression after a missile was fired from Yemen toward Riyadh Saturday. U.S. spokesperson Heather Nauert said it's too early to determine who was responsible.
That is the situation that we're continuing to assess right now. We don't have a full determination on who is responsible for that.
Iran's foreign minister dismissed the allegation as contrary to reality. University of Denver International Affairs Professor Jonathan Edelman said a tough policy toward Iran may be part of his overall Saudi foreign policy strategy.
With Mohammed bin Salman trying to revise the entire nature of Saudi Arabia, what would be the best possible way to unite the country under him? To have an enemy like Iran.
The Security Council is set to meet Wednesday to discuss the humanitarian situation in Yemen, where the Saudi-led coalition has closed access by sea, land, and air in an effort to cut off weapons shipments. Fidel Achaib is with the World Health Organization. She said the humanitarian situation is very bad.
It's also battling a very serious cholera outbreak since months. We are trying to stop it.
Cholera cases are up to top 900,000 since April. An estimated 7 million people in Yemen face famine. Liberia's President Ellen Johnson Sirleaf has warned democracy in the West African country is under threat after the Supreme Court put an indefinite hold on a presidential runoff election over fraud allegations. She called Liberia's democracy as being under assault. This is VOA News. President Donald Trump, before leaving for China, spoke Wednesday to South Korean lawmakers and said the success of the South stands in stark contrast to that of North Korea.
The more successful South Korea becomes, the more decisively you discredit the dark fantasy at the heart of the Kim regime.
Mr. Trump, recalling the sacrifices made during the Korean War, told the National Assembly the North, with its nuclear and missile programs, should not try the U.S.
We will not permit America or our allies to be blackmailed or attacked. We will not allow American cities to be threatened with destruction. We will not be intimidated, and we will not let the worst atrocities in history be repeated here on this ground we fought and died so hard to secure.
Mr. Trump earlier had to abandon a surprise visit to the demilitarized zone separating the Koreas because of bad weather. His five-nation, 12-day trip has been dominated by the twin issues of North Korea and trade. In Washington, a Senate committee Tuesday unanimously backed new sanctions targeting Chinese banks that do business with North Korea, clearing the way for consideration by the full Senate. The measure was named for the late Otto Warmbier, the American college student who was medically evacuated in a coma early this year from a North Korean prison and died days later in the U.S. Russia Tuesday rejected a report by an international inquiry blaming the Syrian government for a deadly toxic gas attack, putting a mandate of a joint investigation team in doubt. The group's report blames Syria for the April 4 sarin gas attack on a rebel-held village that killed more than 80 people. Russia said without changes, it will become a tool just to settle accounts with Syrian authorities. Jonathan Allen is the British deputy ambassador.
In 2013, Russia promised the world that Syria would abandon all of its chemical weapons. Today, to the cost of the people of Syria and to the cost of the international consensus against chemical weapons, that promise remains unfulfilled.
He said Russia is trying to shoot the messenger to cover up for the crimes of the Syrian regime. The team's mandate is set to expire November 14th. Zimbabwe state-controlled media Tuesday said sacked Vice President Emmerson Mnangagwa was plotting to seize power before he was dismissed Monday. Mnangagwa was seen as a likely successor to the 93-year-old President Robert Mugabe. The U.N. Security Council is to meet informally Monday to discuss the deepening crisis in Venezuela. The opposition-controlled National Assembly said inflation there exceeded 800% in the first 10 months of the year. I'm Victor Beatty, VOA News.
That's the latest world news from VOA.
Africa. Welcome to Daybreak Africa from the Voice of America. I'm James Barty in Washington. Today's Wednesday, November 8th, and here are some of the stories we are covering. Four Liberian political parties need to reaffirm their election challenge by denying they are supporting Vice President Boakai's runoff campaign.
The discussions that are being held is purely based on us collaborating and putting our efforts together to make sure that we get the legal victory that the country deserves so that we can be able to organize a rerun of the process.
Ben Sanvi is the national chair of Liberia's opposition Liberty Party. Meanwhile, President Ellen Johnson Sirleaf has thanked Liberians for their patience as their country goes through an electoral transition uncertainty. Another South Sudan military officer defects to Riek Machar's rebels, and Uganda's Prime Minister denies the police are partisan.
I agree with Ndugu Sereko that the police is for all Ugandans and there should be fairness not only in the police but in all state institutions to ensure that Ugandans are indeed enjoying their democratic rights.
Ruhakana Rugunda is Uganda's prime minister. More and more civilians are caught in the middle as South Sudan war nears a four-year mark. Japan gets $4 million food aid to Burundi and a coaching course for women entrepreneurs in Senegal. Those stories, plus our listener of the day, are coming up on Daybreak Africa. In Liberia, the four political parties challenging the conduct of the country's October 10th presidential election on Tuesday met in the capital, Monrovia, to reaffirm their commitment to pursuing the legal process. Liberia's Supreme Court Monday ordered the National Elections Commission to review the party's complaint. The court also delayed the runoff election, which should have been held yesterday, Tuesday. Ben Sanvi is a national chair of Liberia's opposition Liberty Party, which is spearheading the legal challenge. He denies Tuesday's gathering was an endorsement of Vice President Joseph Boakai's campaign for the runoff election, if and whenever it is called. Instead, he said the gathering was a reconfirmation of the legal process and a call for the annulment and rerun of the October 10th presidential first round vote.
There is a commitment and a solidarity effort that we've come together. One thing is that we believe that the election that was held on October 10 does not and did not reflect the true will of the Liberian people. So all of these parties, led by Councillor Brunskin, who is our standard bearer, we filed a legal complaint. But yes, there is some solidarity. There is a collaboration effort for us to pursue this legally. And we're calling for the annulment and for a rerun of the October 10 elections.
As you know, the Elections Commission has scheduled a runoff. Does your party plan to support the Unity Party, meaning the vice president?
Well, we're not having any of those discussions right now. None whatsoever. We definitely cannot be undercutting our own legal case. If we go ahead and have political discussions with either the CDC or the Unity Party at this point, then we might as well throw our case out of the court. We believe in the case that we've brought forth. We know we've seen the evidences. We submitted the evidences to the National Elections Commission. And that's what the Unity Party, the ANC, and the ALP, all three of them, have seen and have decided to support us. So the answer to your question is no. No political discussions have been held between Councillor Brunskin and Vice President Boakai or Mr. Urie or Mr. Cummings. The discussions that are being held is purely based on us collaborating and putting our efforts together to make sure that we get the legal victory that the country deserves so that we can be able to organize a rerun of the process.
But has the Unity Party, the Vice President's party, asked Mr. Brunskin to support him in the event of a runoff?
No, not to my knowledge. I can speak very firmly on that. All of the conversations that have been held, some of them which I've been privy to, have been focused solely on the fact. I think the vice president was at our national headquarters, along with Mr. Cummings and Mr. Urie. And the vice president was very strong in his statement today when he talked about the fact that the elections that happened on October 10 did not reflect the will of the people. And so we needed to have those allegations and incidences of fraud and irregularities addressed and investigated in line with what the Supreme Court has said. And if need be, we will go to the Supreme Court to file an appeal.
So let me ask you again what I put to your standard bearer. Are you ready to accept any ruling from the Elections Commission, whether it goes against you or in your favor?
we are going to accept whatever ruling that comes from the Supreme Court. We already know that NEC is going to rule against us because in this case, they are the defendant, they are the judge, and they are the jury. So we understand what's going to happen. The chairman of the Election Commission have already made it very clear in press conferences that the Liberty Party case has no merit. So we understand what's going to happen. But we are going to seek an appeal at the Liberian Supreme Court. And whatever decision that comes out of that appeal, we will accept and we will abide by because we are law-abiding citizens.
Mr. Sanvi, so nice to talk with you. And always a pleasure.
Thank you, and anytime.
Ben Sanvi is national chair of Liberia's opposition Liberty Party. He was speaking with me from the capital, Monrovia. Liberian President Ellen Johnson Sirleaf has thanked Liberians for their patience and what she called peaceful demeanor as their country goes through a period of uncertainty in its electoral transition. In a nationwide speech on Tuesday, President Sirleaf said Liberia's democratic institutions are strong and will withstand the test of time.
I commend you for your patience and your peaceful demeanor. Liberia's laws and democratic institutions are strong. They will withstand this challenge and they will stand the test of time. We can strengthen them by demonstrating maturity and not abuse our positions or misuse the platforms that have been made available to the country through news media and new technology. We must continue to respect each other, the rule of law, human kindness, and decency. Allegations, hate speech, insightful language has been defining what should be a proud moment in our history. I'm glad that all political parties have agreed consistently and publicly to adhere to the provisions provided under our laws. These provisions include the right to challenge through an established and orderly process the voting and electoral arrangements that have been put in place. Democracy is only as strong as its weakest link, and at this moment, our democracy is under assault. Our country's reputation is under assault. Our economy is under stress. We politicians must do better. Our people went the distance. We achieved 73% voters turnout, demonstrating confidence in our electoral process and the future of our country. Historians will look back at this time and judge us by how we conduct ourselves at this critical moment in time. We cannot fail them. We cannot damage our future.
That's Liberian President Ellen Johnson Sirleaf speaking Tuesday in a nationwide address. Another senior officer in South Sudan Army has defected to join the Sudan People's Liberation Army in opposition rebels who are loyal to former First Vice President Riek Machar. Colonel Chan Garang said he wants to fight the government of President Salva Kiir because he says President Kiir arrests people who criticize the government in Juba. Garang tells John Tanza of VOA South Sudan in Focus program through an interpreter that he defected with 200 soldiers and is ready to attack Juba.
I left the South Sudan Army. I am Lieutenant Colonel Chang Garang Luau. Because the army and government of South Sudan, which Salva Kiir commands and leads, has failed politically and failed to manage the affairs of the army. They are arresting people left and right. The prison is full of thousands of inmates from Equatoria, Bahr Ghazal, and Upper Nile alike.
Before you left Juba, where you paid your salary, we hear people there have not received their salaries for quite some time now. Did you receive your salary?
I did not receive my salaries for 7 months. There's no money, only in the pockets of individuals. They say they wanted to start a national dialogue. We heard of the Gen Council and other things.
And of South Sudan, how are you going to do that?
I left with 200 men. Among them, there are 18 officers. And I can fight the government because I have joined the SPLA-IO, which is a big force and an organized force, and we are going to fight Juba and change the regime of Salva Kiir.
So you have joined the SPLA in opposition?
I have joined the IO along with my men and my 18 officers.
In South Sudan now, there is SPLM-IO led by rebel leader Riek Machar, and there is IO led by the first vice president, Taban Dengai. Which one have you joined?
I am with Riek Machar because Salva Kiir in 2013 said there was an attempted coup only 1 year ahead of elections that was supposed to take place. He said there was a coup and aborted democracy in South Sudan. There was no coup, but if he saw that you had support from the people, he would say you are attempting a coup. He got rid of many people. Nyangden Garang, Mabio Garang, Pagan Amum, Majang Agot, and the former governor of Western Equatoria, Bakasoro, and many others. People who had a political future in South Sudan. And we in the army are young, and we have a future in this country.
You say you have 200 men with you. Where are they?
Among my men, you find Denka, Nue, Equatorians, Zande, people from the Kapueta, Dendenga, Bari, and different tribes. And when I came here to this army that they used to tell us was killing Dinkas, I found nothing to support that. They welcomed me and received me well. I feel it's a national army.
Can you tell us what you're trying to achieve by joining the SPLA-IO?
I want for all the factions that have rebelled to come together against the man who wants to kill us all and imprison us from all the 64 tribes. I say we join our hands together and change this regime so that all South Sudanese shall be united after that.
Some people say you left Juba because you are angry that President Salva Kiir put General Paul Malong under house arrest. Is that true?
Paul Malong was the chief of general staff and was working with President Kiir and have nothing to do with him. I am against a regime that kills people wantonly. People have lost their children, their wives, and the prison is full of our people. This is not about Malong. The regime led by Kiir is wrong and unjust.
Where are you speaking from?
I am in Juba.
That's Colonel Chang Garang, a top officer in the South Sudan Army, who defected this week to join Riek Machar's SPLA-IO rebels. He was speaking in Arabic to John Tanza of VOA South Sudan in Focus program from an undisclosed location in South Sudan. This is Wednesday, November 8th, and you're listening to Daybreak Africa on The Voice of America. I'm James Bote in Washington. Daybreak Africa time is coming up at 18 minutes past the hour. The war in South Sudan continues to exert a heavy toll on civilians as the conflict nears the end of its fourth month. VOA's Jason Pantinki reports from Majale, Uganda, where hundreds of civilians are camped along the South Sudanese border after a week of fighting between government and rebel forces.
A funeral procession for a new casualty of South Sudan's four-year civil war. Duku Evans, in his 30s, was killed Friday amid clashes between government and rebel forces in the strategic Kajokeji region bordering Uganda, which has been an opposition stronghold throughout the year. As pallbearers lowered his body into a grave, his father, Moses Sokiri, held his head in his hands, shaking. He says, "I feel so emotionally bad because this is my son, who was always helping me in everything. Now he is dead. I really don't know what I can do. I don't know how my future will be." It's unclear who killed Evans. Three different armed groups have a presence in Kajokeji. The government army has been in the east of the region. The SPLA-IO rebel group of former President Riek Machar and the National Salvation Front, a new rebel group, have been in the west around a town called Sokare. Civilians have also stayed in the west seeking protection behind rebel lines after fleeing atrocities blamed on government soldiers. Fearing trouble between the two rebel groups, elders tried to mediate, but those efforts failed. In mid-October, the National Salvation Front, nicknamed NAS, captured Sokari from the SPLA-IO. Dube Sam, a 35-year-old farmer with a disabled foot, says the NAS commander told civilians to leave the area, so he moved with his family to a displaced persons camp near the town. But then, a week later, the government attacked the two rebel groups, forcing Sam and many others to flee the camp to Uganda. He says, "We were hearing the gunshots, the heavy artillery, the RPGs, the small guns. We heard they even had the armored vehicles. My feeling was definitely I will also be killed." Some of the SPLA-IO rebels who were chased out from there said the situation was bad and that we should move away. Numerous civilians blamed the rebel infighting for allowing the government to advance. Sam, the disabled farmer, says, "My own view is the fighting between the SPLA-IO and NAS weakened everything, and the Dinkas are actually watching them and saying, let them actually finish themselves, and when they don't have ammunition, then we will come." And of course, that is what happened. By Friday, only a handful of people were left in the camp, including a local elder and chief, Matatia Abangroka. That's when, the local chief says, the government forces, which comprise mostly ethnic Dinka, attacked the camp. Rebel forces responded. The local chief says, the Dinka came in the morning around 7 o'clock. They started shooting at the camp. Then immediately we took off because we thought they were going to kill us. It was sometime during this fight that Duku Evans was killed. He is now buried near the spot on the border where hundreds of civilians are camped, unsure of what to do, including Susan Kiden, 23, who fled with 3 small children. She says, "We are stuck because if we go to the refugee camps in Uganda, the life is full of suffering. The food isn't given out on time. But if I decide to go back to South Sudan, I will be forced to run away from death." With conflicting reports on who now controls Kajukeji, it is unlikely civilians will be able to return home anytime soon. Jason Patinkin for VOA News in Mijale, Uganda.
Opposition members of Uganda's parliament have taken Prime Minister Ruhakanda Rugunda to task over the conduct of the police in their attempt to disperse members of parliament who are opposed to the effort to amend age limit in the constitution. The MPs accused the Ugandan police force of bias in favor of those who support lifting the age limit. Mugumi Davis Rakarinj reports from Kampala.
Kampala Central Member of Parliament Mohamed Nsereko tasked the Prime Minister to explain why the police is being biased.
Political leaders from the NRM can be either district chairperson of the NRM, but also members of parliament of different areas. And they go within that capacity from now, and we've seen that in various meetings, conducting consultations and popularization of Article 102B. People that don't either red ribbons or have tojikwata ko like Honorable Mao have been stopped from interacting with other persons by the same police because they are anti-lifting of the age limit cap.
NRM stands for the ruling party, the National Resistance Movement, which has been in power since 1986. It is expected that the amendment of the controversial article, which puts age cap for one standing for presidency to be between 35 to 75 years of age, is meant to grant President Museveni, who will be 77 years in 2021, a chance to contest again. Leaders of opposition and those opposed to the amendment of the constitution have recently been arrested by police while consulting with the electorate. Many at times, the police have used rubber bullets and tear gas to disperse crowds organized by those against the amendment of the constitution. Speaking before the Parliamentary Legal Committee yesterday, Tuesday, Rugunda denied the government involvement in the police actions. He instead accuses those opposed the amendment of what he calls provocation. Rugunda says the police is non-partisan.
I agree with Ndugu Sereko that the police is for all Ugandans, and there should be fairness not only in the police but in all state institutions to ensure that Ugandans are indeed enjoying their democratic rights.
But parliamentarian Wilfred Nwagaba insisted the Prime Minister should come forward and condemn police actions.
Now, are you going to issue a directive to the police to stop its illegal activities against citizens from conducting their affairs lawfully?
Prime Minister Rugunda, without making clarifications, says the state will investigate the police actions. Last month, the police issued a directive preventing members of parliament from attending consultative meetings outside their constituents. Uganda's constitution grants citizens the freedom to assemble and demonstrate together with others peacefully. Those opposed the amendment of the constitution say it will enable Uganda to peacefully have a transition of power. For VOA News, I am Mugume, Davis Rwakarinji in Kampala, Uganda.
Japan has given food aid worth $4 million to Burundi as part of efforts to fight food insecurity in the country. As Moses Havyarimana reports from Bujumbura, Burundi is one of the countries affected by prolonged dry seasons.
The Japan food aid grant worth $4 million comes after Burundi was ranked among the hungriest country in the world. The country was hit by the prolonged dry season last year that left more than 3 million people affected by the food insecurity. The Japanese ambassador to Rwanda, Takayuki Miyashita, said that the food grant will consist of 3,300 tons of Japanese rice.
Burundi has been suffering from food shortage due to the decade-long instability that devastated agriculture nationwide. Now, almost half of the whole nation is facing a scarcity of food, and about 600,000 inhabitants are confronted with more serious food crisis.
The World Bank report in 2016 indicates that the economic growth remains negative due to the fragile political environment. Private consumption likely weakened following the contraction in food production due to the climate shocks, longer than expected lean season, and forced migration. Burundi Foreign Affairs Minister Alain Nyamitwe said that the food aid will benefit mainly Burundians in the northern part of the country.
Food aid, which is granted by Japan, will serve the purpose of meeting the needs of the groups of people who have been affected by the drought, you know, which is induced by the climate change phenomena El Nino and La Nina.
The Red Cross reported more than 5,000 homes and thousands of hectares of cultivated fields have been affected by the El Nino climate change in the country. 15 out of the 18 provinces have been affected by the climate change in Burundi. The country's inflation rate, which was last recorded in August, shows that the inflation rose from 7% to 13%. Amin Hakizimana, a food seller in Bujumbura Market, said that the food prices hiked in almost every 4 months. She says that rice have become very expensive. Hakizimana says that they used to sell 1 kilogram of rice at $1, but now they sell a kilogram at 1.3 cents and doesn't expect the price to stabilize soon. Burundi is currently experiencing relative stability after the 2015 violent protest that led to more than 500 people getting killed. The country still struggles economically after European Union and the United States suspended direct aid to the government after the government was accused of human rights violations in 2015. Moses Havyarimana, VOA Africa, Bujumbura.
Briefly, before we leave you, a summary of Africa news. In Liberia, the four political parties challenging the conduct of the country's October 10th presidential election on Tuesday met in the capital, Monrovia, to reaffirm their commitment to pursuing the legal process. But they denied the gathering was an endorsement of Vice President Joseph Boakai's campaign for a runoff election if and whenever it is rescheduled. And that is it for this Wednesday, November 8th edition of Daybreak Africa. On behalf of the Daybreak Africa crew, I'm James Barton in Washington, wishing you in Africa a very good Wednesday.
VOA Africa has built a successful, effective social media strategy through Facebook, YouTube, Twitter, and other digital platforms. We are responding to our audience on the African continent and in the global diaspora. We believe in the power of connection and interaction to bring you news that is comprehensive, accurate, and objective. We see the changes in technology as an opportunity to engage with our audiences about the issues that affect them. At VOA VOA Africa, we don't just report the news, we help shape the conversation on the continent. VOA, your trusted source for news and information.